listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. Of course, Sir Andrew Gribble was just with us. 216-578-0850. We are soon to be joined by Seth Devolve, the Browns' new tight end, fourth rounder out of Princeton. The highest pick in the history of Princeton, which is pretty impressive considering all the people out there at the Ivy League school.
It is.
Just adding to the Ivy League notion of our organization here.
Absolutely. And I think it's he's going to be a guy that I think on the practice field you will see flashes from. And the flashes are going to be 50% set the valve and 50% schematics, which means Hugh Jackson putting set the valve in a situation to make a flash play.
Yeah.
You know, on a linebacker who doesn't cover a lot, you know, Seth is ready to go. Let's get him.
Let's bring him in here. The newest member of the Cleveland Browns, fourth round pick, the highest draftee in the history of his alma mater, Princeton, Seth DeValve. Seth, welcome to the Browns. Congrats on making it to the National Football League as well.
Hey, guys. Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
All right, Seth, let's talk a little bit about your game. I did some film homework on you today, was watching your game against Dartmouth, 9 catches, 110 yards. I know you had a couple hundred yarders back in 2014 as well. You lined up out wide, in the slot, in the backfield, moved all over the place, and it seemed like they really liked your change of direction, a lot of kind of jerk routes and stop and goes that you utilize in those games. What do you bring to the table, given your size, yet you move like a wide receiver on tape?
Hey, yeah, first of all, that's a pretty good analysis. I like your analysis of the jerk route there. That's exactly what we do.
Well, thank you.
So at Princeton, you know, we run a spread offense with, an X, a Y, and a Z receiver, and then a running back and what we call an H-back, which basically is the adjuster in the formations. So the H-back can really be a wide receiver, he can be a slot receiver, he can be a wing, he can be a tight end, and he can even be a running back. So, you know, as my career progressed through Princeton, you know, I started out my freshman, sophomore year as a wide receiver, continued for the entirety as a wide receiver, but as time went on, moved into that H-back role.
Uh-huh.
And our offensive coordinator, James Perry, would, put me in that H-back role so that he could move me around the field, accordingly. So that's how I got into those different spots and, you know, got experience playing those different positions.
And I think as Nathan and I, you know, look into your film and understand this roster and the creativity that Hugh Jackson brings from an offensive mindset, that's probably going to be a very similar role that you'll play in the National Football League, at least early here in Cleveland with Gary Barnage at tight end. And, of course, other four wide receivers in your draft class, Brian Hartline, Andrew Hawkins, that you're probably going to move around and you're going to be a mismatch guy to try to get you on a linebacker or on a nickelback where you're going to obviously, you know, be able to, you know, push him around.
Yeah, I would imagine so. We haven't had specific conversations about what my role is going to look like. Obviously, that will, you know, play out as the offseason and preseason progress. But, yeah, I'd imagine, you know, what I bring to the table is mismatches either out wide on a DB or in the box on a linebacker. So I would imagine so, yes.
What's the one game, if you were going to recommend people to watch to get a feel for you, what's the one game that you would say, this is the definitive Seth game at Princeton?
Yeah, you know, I played most of the 2015 season injured.
Okay.
And that being said, I'd probably go back to 2014, my San Diego film.
Yeah.
At San Diego.
Nine for a buck, 23 and a touch. Not bad.
Right. And week five in 2014 against Brown. Those were two games that I would put out there.
What was the injury that you were playing with in 2015? Because I know you've talked a lot about the foot issues and the surgeries that you've had that were non-football related. What were the injuries that you were battling last year? I noticed you were wearing a knee brace in that game against Dartmouth.
Yeah, that's right. So I was battling through my foot problem for the 2015 season. I actually had, you know, surgery scheduled immediately following the season. So I was just kind of getting through that. And then, unfortunately, in week two, I Had a grade 2 MCL tear in my right knee, and that's why I was wearing that knee brace.
Gotcha.
For the rest of the season. So, you know, during the season when you rehab something, especially in the Ivy League when it's only a 10-week season, you know, you don't have a ton of time to really get back to full strength. You just gotta strap it up and get out there. So, that's what I did.
I like the toughness.
Yeah, you got to love it. And just walk us through what I guess the last 4 days have really been like for you since hearing your name called, knowing that you're going to come to Cleveland, setting plans to get here for the upcoming rookie minicamp. You know, as we saw in your workout video, you know, as you get ready for the pro day, it's like your teammates were a big part of kind of hyping you up to perform that well in front of, you know, many NFL scouts as well as general managers. So just walk us through the last 4 days and how it's been and kind of the notoriety that you now created to Princeton now that you've made it to the NFL.
Yeah, you know, initially, when I got the call, I was with my family and a couple of my close friends at my parents' home where I grew up in Manchester, Connecticut. It was great to get the call, especially so early on in the day. We got to, spend the rest of the day celebrating. The next day, actually, I drove back to Princeton to round up some of my stuff here. I've been able to see some of my coaches and some of my teammates, like you mentioned, who were there supporting me at Pro Day, which was awesome. I love those guys. Beyond thanking a lot of people, not a whole lot has changed. You know, I'm getting ready to leave for Cleveland on Tuesday. To be honest, I don't want a whole lot to change. I want to just do what I've always done.
Yep.
Play football the way I've always played football, train the way I've always trained. You know, I plan on continuing to do exactly what I've done to get here.
And you said you talked about being with your family and getting that phone call, you know, early in the day. Entering the NFL draft, did you have a round that you thought you would go in based around your conversations, you know, with NFL scouts or NFL teams? And your overall skill set and how that would transfer to the NFL?
Yeah, so I guess first and foremost, I knew I was going to be a Saturday guy. I didn't anticipate going, obviously, on Thursday or Friday. That being said, depending on the team that you talk to, I had a lot of different grades on me, you know, all the way from third or fourth round to undrafted free agent. So different teams had different opinions of me. I think, you know, for a guy who's going to be a Saturday guy, I think that kind of is true for just about all Saturday guys. You know, some teams fall in love with you. Some teams think, you know, you're just an average player. At the end of the day, it just takes one team. And, I'm very happy to be a part of the Cleveland family now.
Well, certainly you did go in the fourth round there. Does it fuel you when you know some teams think that you're an undrafted free agent type of a player and then you go in the fourth round? Is it like, I'm going to show everybody that the Browns were right about me and these other guys were wrong?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I knew, you know, I have confidence in my ability and my work ethic, you know, to prove that was the right decision. You know, and I have every expectation that is what's going to happen. But to be quite honest, I don't get distracted too much about people's opinions. You know, I had a coach a long time ago who said something that has stuck with me to this day, which is basically, you know, you play the game of football not to prove everybody wrong who said you couldn't do it, but instead to prove everybody right who have always believed in you.
I like that.
So, you know, I don't play the game to prove people wrong. I play the game for the people who have always stood in my corner, who have always believed in me, who have always helped me, and I play to prove those people right.
Let me ask you, who's somebody that you modeled your game after, if there was anybody that was kind of an inspiration to you?
I've always modeled it after Rob Gronkowski.
I saw number 87 on the film. Yes, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. Princeton kind of just handed me that number, and as time went on, people started making the connection and giving me nicknames like Lil Gronk.
Yep.
Or, you know, Princeton Gronk or something like that. You know, Gronkowski obviously is a very good player, He's the type of guy similar to me who carries body weight in a very deceptive way and can still run and move really well. You know, a lot of people, when they guess my weight, tend to guess about 20 to 25 pounds below what I actually am.
Okay.
So, you know, that's how I was able to be 245, 250 pounds and still play wide receiver.
Hey, you look like a receiver out there.
Right, because, you know, I can still move around, you know, with the guys that are 200 pounds or even less.
Do you believe in party cruises?
Believe in them?
Yeah. You saw what Gronk did. I'm saying, is that like, you know, is that something, you know, how similar are you guys?
Do you have brothers that will also be playing in the NFL?
Right.
I mean, it sounds like a great time.
It did look like a good time.
You love tipping them back with your father.
That's right.
Party cruise sounds nice, yeah.
It does sound like a good thing.
It'd be a Browns party cruise.
Yeah, we need to do that. Well, when we start winning, we'll worry about fun things like party cruises.
That's right, that's right.
Seth, certainly excited to have you out here. Looking forward to seeing you come out and compete. I do have to ask, when you went back to Princeton, were they like, you're going to a Harvard team? Or did you get any love for that or any flack for that back at Princeton?
No, it's all, you know, it's all good once you graduate, you know what I mean?
Yep, you got to bury that hatchet. The guys made a joke, I don't know if this made it back to you, that they actually wanted to take you in the third round, but since you were from Princeton, not Harvard, they wanted to make you wait one more round.
Yeah.
That's why you went in the fourth.
I did hear that,
All right, Seth, certainly looking forward to seeing you come out here, get to work. The rookie minicamp begins next week. All you can meet him and see him at FanFest next Saturday, May the 14th, when the Browns have their FanFest live at First Energy Stadium, including a rookie camp practice. So Seth will be able to introduce himself to the dog pound there, and certainly looking forward to how you're going to do out there and seeing you compete for a spot on this offense and a spot on this team.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks. Seth Duvall, the newest member of the Browns from Princeton to, of course, the Cleveland Browns. When we come back, we'll open up the phone lines 216-578-0850 here on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm. You got to like the toughness of this class. I mean, there's no doubt, mentally tough, overcoming adversity, physically tough, playing through pain. You know, when you're in Ivy League school, you have a 10-week season. There's not much time to rehab, and you got to spend a lot of time studying, I'd imagine. The guy's a mechanical and aerospace engineer.
And if he's the highest ever drafted Princeton Tiger, probably not going to win a lot of football games without him either. And I think he knew that. The coaches knew that. For him to essentially play through injury for those 10 football games, that means he meant a lot to that program and probably wouldn't have brought a lot of wins along with it if he hadn't.
Over the last 2 years when he was on the field, he accounted for 22% of their passing production.
Point taken.
Pretty solid, yes. I would say fairly important as well. 216-578-0850. Dave in Garfield Heights. Dave, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. I got a couple questions for Matt. With that, about the guy we picked up from our second round draft choice. How much is it going to be a transition? This is like the third defensive end who we're going to have to convert to a linebacker. I mean, he's going to have to go in the pass coverage once in a while.
Yeah, it is going to be a transition. As we've seen Armani Bryant play outside linebacker essentially with his hand on the ground. In speaking to John Pagano, the defense coordinator for the San Diego Chargers, about how he would use Joey Bosa, he said, and I asked this question, how often do you actually are in a base 3-4 defense? He said about 30% of the time. So the other 70% is with a guy like Ogba or Joey Bosa with their hand in the dirt. But that being said, the role that I think he will play, because you want to take the thinking out of it as much as possible and you want Emmanuel Ogba to pin his ears back and rush the quarterback, he's going to be in situations or in defenses where his responsibility will be to rush the quarterback. You don't want to confuse a young player with drops and angles and communication. You want him to be in the football game and you drafted him to put pressure on the quarterback. And I think that's the situation, at least early on, that you could see him in. Now, the evolution of becoming a well-rounded linebacker will happen in time.
Yeah, and two other quick questions. I know the defensive end we picked up from Penn State was in a 4-3. Is that going to be a big adjustment? Because he'll have to worry about, you know, the five instead of the, you know, being outside a lot. Is that going to be a big adjustment?
I don't think it'll be a big adjustment. It's just a matter of, you know, the coaches will school him on technique, and I think the one thing that I would like to see from him as well is for him to put on a little bit weight, because he's rolling with the big boys, you know, 320-pound guards and big physical tackles as well.
And I'll just say this about Ogba. We've talked to him. He played in a two-point stance a lot at Oklahoma State. So that's what the natural transition is. He's not going to be asked to drop a ton, but when you're 6'4", 275, and you can run a 4.640, if you have to drop every now and then as a surprise, and just basically when you do that, and tell people when he's not going to be asked to drop and run with people on crossers. He's going to be asked to drop in a zone blitz and just get in a lane and be big.
Correct. And I think the best way to say it right now, and I've not seen the Jim O'Neill playbook, and I've not been in the Ray Horton's playbook, but I understand what the Pittsburgh Steelers do and what they do very well, and it's a system that I played in, is you play some matchup zones that look like man-to-man, but we're not going to be pressed outside with our corners getting run off as frequently as we did in the past in that man-press Mike Pettine system. So they're going to have corners up support in zone situations. So you could see him dropping over the middle as a hot hole defender there in the middle. You could see him dropping to the curl flat. So he's going to be dropping flat to the numbers, you know, and then making a play up on either like a flare or a dart route out to the flat. But other than that, he's going to be taking up space in zones, you know, and creating space, taking away throwing windows more so than anything. I think that might be the biggest transition for him, is going to be dropping. Not that he's going to be doing it all that frequently, as we saw. Paul Kruger, year one with the Browns, I think rushed 90+% of the time.
Right.
Okay. So Ogba is going to be rushing the quarterback.
Yeah. And he'll come in there, and there are going to be times when you could see Nassib, Kruger, and Ogba all on the field rushing the quarterback in those nickel and dime situations. Let's go to Eric in Akron now. Eric, welcome to the show.
Hi. I got a question for you folks. About 2 weeks ago, you had a guy on that has done analysis of quarterbacks over many, many years and supposedly had a real high rate of
on Jared Goff. Andrew Healy from ESPN. Yep. He was
Healy.
I've
been looking to try.
You're trying to ask where did he have Kessler?
Yeah, I was wondering. Yes, and I've been trying to figure that out.
Yeah, I tweeted him.
I tweeted him today, and
he had Kessler down in the middle of the road, not one of the elite prospects on his analytics study. He was kind of in the middle in terms of success failure rate in the middle.
The quarterbacks.
Yeah, I think he was between when we looked at
it. All quarterbacks or just this.
No, but in terms of all of them, I think he was somewhere between Goff and Wentz on their study.
Oh, between Goff and Wentz. Okay.
Yeah, but Wentz was real low, if you remember, on the study. They were not very ambitious about Carson Wentz. Go to Kevin in North Royalton. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Listen, Coleman was the Fred Biletnikoff winner.
Yes, he was.
Okay. I'd like to know how the I don't know if you would know this or not, the past 5 years, how the Fred Biletnikoff winners did in the NFL.
Yes, I do know
that.
Are
you asking us, or do you know this?
Not me. I would know that.
Okay.
Okay. So the previous Biletnikoff winners were last year, the year before, was Amari Cooper, who we know has gone on to have a very good career. Before that, it was Brandon Cooks, who was incredibly productive last season with New Orleans. Then you have Marquise Lee, who has not been lived up to the hype. In fact, of the guys that were drafted there, he is the one down in Jacksonville. It's been Allen Robinson that's kind of surpassed him. And also, you've had the undrafted Allen Hurns, so he hasn't been there. But Amari Cooper was over 1,000 yards last year. Brandon Cooks had 1,138 and 9 touchdowns, so that's 2 for 2. Then we talked about Marquise Lee, struggled a little bit. Justin Blackmon, the only reason that he is not playing in the NFL is because of off-the-field situations, but was unbelievable when he played on the field for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Golden Tate, we know, has been a very successful receiver for both Seattle and Detroit. Before that, it was Michael Crabtree. And going back for the last decade, the other one would there be Calvin Johnson. 2005 was the anomaly. Mike Haas has not gone on to a productive pro career, but then you had Braylon Edwards and Larry Fitzgerald, the two before that. So since 2003, you've had Larry Fitzgerald, Pro Bowler. Braylon Edwards has made the Pro Bowl. Calvin Johnson, one of the best to ever play the game. Crabtree has been an 1,000-yard receiver. Tate's been a 1,000-yard receiver. Blackman was dominant off the field issues. Lee hasn't panned out. Brandon Cooks, 1,100 yards last year. Cooper, rookie of the year type of a season, and now Corey Coleman. So it's actually been a pretty good predictor of success in the National Football League.
It sounds very encouraging for the Browns. I hope it pans out right.
Yeah, we certainly do as well. Corey Coleman, a very explosive athlete, and excited to see what he can do. Guy who had over 1,300 yards and 20 touchdowns in only 8 games a year ago. Mike in Youngstown, welcome to the show.
Gentlemen, it's a pleasure as usual. A couple questions. Real quick, a friend of mine, she saw Bartavius Mingo, Jeremy lives in Strongsville,
uh-huh.
And he said that Mingo was huge. I mean, you guys probably see him, but he said he definitely was big. And I know, you know, that they didn't sign him, but you know, I'm just wondering if, and first of all, thought the draft was great, and I thought your analysis of the draft was great. But
thanks.
Mingo, if he does, you know, did gain the weight and he does shine, do you think with the analytics that they would just definitely get rid of him, or it's going to be based
on
what
happens? I think it's going to be based on how he it depends on how, you know, he performs this year. They weren't going to sign him to the fifth-year tender because that would have locked him in at, I think, $11 or $12 million guaranteed next year. So I don't think they wanted to do that. What they did want to do, they're going to get a look at him. If Bartavius Mingo plays well and fits in the scheme that he was drafted to be in, by the way, for Ray Horton, I think he absolutely could be back here.
And another point, and this kind of takes the spotlight off of the past inadequacies of the Cleveland Browns drafting players into the NFL. And as I look at Pro Football Talk over the last, say, 24 hours, just look at the number of fifth-year options that are not being picked up by the teams of the players, which means that the NFL draft is truly rolling the dice.
Yeah.
You know, if these guys were slam dunks, you know, first-round picks, fifth-year option would be, boom, I got to have him. Got to have him. And what we're seeing is he's got to prove it to us, which in turn means 4 years into these guys' NFL careers, they're not a sure thing to be guaranteed a second contract or even a fifth year with their current team. So it's happening all around the league. Sometimes we're so dead set and laser focused on what the Browns are doing and so critical of it. And again, I'm not trying to say it's good, but there are strikeouts happening in every draft class and multiple strikeouts in every draft class throughout the NFL as well.
And I will say it's funny to look back on it. But if people remember, Gibbs, I'm sure you remember this. In 2013, do you remember what Joe Banner's strategy was in that draft?
That was the longest weekend of my life, and I've covered about 12 NFL drafts.
That was my first NFL draft.
It was get out of this draft.
Yes.
Get out of this draft because he did not
everything.
He did not think it was a good one. And so they traded out of that one into the 2014 draft, which is going to go down as one of the better drafts. Unfortunately, he never got an opportunity to pick those players. As we know, he was gone in between 2013 and 14, and it was Ray Farmer who did. But I think that was – it's interesting looking back on it that Joe Banner, although we didn't get a chance to see his vision out, was actually correct in getting out of the 2013 draft and focusing on 2014.
Yeah.
Never got the opportunity to follow
Jarvis
up on
Jones,
it.
No fifth-year option picked up. Chance Womack, you know, Bartavius Mingo. So those are the three that, you know, I've read most recently that, you know, come to mind. But there's been many more over the last couple of days that the teams have said they're not picking up that fifth-year option.
Yeah, there was 5 of the top 10 from that year, including multiple offensive linemen. So, that's the one thing I'm really starting to take umbrage with, and I think the facts bear it out, which is it is erroneous to say that taking an offensive lineman in the first round is a safe pick. There are no such thing as safe picks.
No.
You got to find out what you can do. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll get back to the phone lines, 216-578-0850. We'll also hear what Todd McShay and Mel Kiper thought about the Browns' haul of 14 players over the 3 days of the 2016 NFL Draft.
strictly out of curiosity. What would happen if you...
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Peace and love here on CBD. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs. We're going to get to the phone calls in a second, but let's hear what some of the ESPN experts had to say about the draft. By the way, have you seen the Adam Schein video where he says over and over and screams as he does, "You fail, Cleveland. Cleveland, you fail," and gave the Browns...
Who's Adam Schein?
For the draft?
Never heard of you. Sorry.
Yeah. Watch it. It's actually pretty funny. And I want that guy from Cold Takes. You know that guy, Cold Takes Exposed? I want that guy to save that one so that we can see it in a few years when the Browns turn it around. All right, let's go and hear from Todd McShay. Is it both of them together or each individual?
Yes, both of them together, actually, wrapping up the Browns draft.
Todd McShay and Mel Kiper Jr. A little lukewarm on the Browns draft.
I was surprised they didn't look at Connor Cook over Cody Kessler, but they obviously have a strong field. Kessler is a guy, he's a game manager, is what he is. He doesn't make mistakes. He won't force it. And he's got huge hands. So, you know, for being not, say, physically imposing, he's got huge hands. That'll obviously help him in poor weather conditions. You know, Brian Sipe had a good career in Cleveland. That was brought up out of San Diego State. And, you know, Bernie Kosar came out of Miami of Florida and with that awkward delivery, unorthodox delivery, and he had success in Cleveland. So we'll see. You know, Cody Kessler looked like to me to be more of a career backup type, but obviously they see more than that with him, or you don't take him in the third round. I had no problem with Emmanuel Ogba. I thought he was a guy, showed flashes, needs some technique work, and he's still raw, but he's a very hard worker. Carl Nassib had the one great year. He showed ability to get off the edge. Sean Coleman as a guy has a chance to be a helpful offensive tackle. I like that. I thought Lewis was a reach. Kindred was a reach. I look at Peyton Higgins as nice picks where they were taken, particularly Higgins, who's one of the most skilled route runners in this draft. So kind of, they also get a second round pick from Tennessee in 2017. You know, Corey Coleman started it all off. If he can learn to run NFL routes and have better recognition with his eyes, to an NFL and obviously, you know, going through and evolving as an NFL receiver, it's going to take a little bit of time coming out of that Baylor offense. But, overall, they got quantity. Some quality, but I think ultimately it's going to be about Cook and Kessler, how they end up 3 years from now. And passing on Wentz, who is now in Philadelphia, when a few years ago they passed on Roethlisberger when they had Jeff Garcia.
And I think one part that's interesting, too, is you've got Robert Griffin III, who's a good deep ball thrower and in that kind of style, and you've got a Corey Coleman who's a really good vertical route runner and can create after the catch, but what he does best is run nine routes and post, you know, deep posts and post corners. And then you bring in Cody Kessler, who's more, he fits best in a precision-based timing offense. Very accurate, short to intermediate, outstanding football intelligence, quick release, extends plays with his awareness, and I think sneaky, underrated quickness and mobility. But where he struggles is with the arm strength and accuracy throwing the deep ball. So they're almost polar opposites in terms of quarterbacks, and it'll be interesting to see kind of the style and how that all plays out. But Hugh Jackson, from what I understand, has always liked this guy going back to USC and really wanted to bring him in and thinks that he can develop him.
All right, Todd McShay and Mel Kiper there on the draft. Obviously, a work in progress with a lot of these guys. And, you know, you got 14 of them. You got to see how this all turns out. We're going to go to the phone lines now, 216-578-0850. We've got Chris in Pennsylvania with us. Chris.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Great. I love the show. I listen every day.
Thank you.
I just wanted to talk. I loved what the Browns did in the draft. What do you guys think? How do you guys think the secondary will be this year? I hope the secondary won't have as many injuries and that the guys that are all in there can compete for the starting jobs. And, like, I guess I was just wondering, like, do you think, K'Juan Williams is, I think he's a really, really great player and maybe, like, one of the most underrated players in the NFL. And I was thinking, you know how we always put him in sub packages. Do you think it's possible, like, that maybe he could be opposite Joe Hayden, like, at times? I don't know. I don't really know how it all work out, but I just wanted to see what you guys thought of that.
Sure, we'll talk about the secondary real quickly. At the safety position now, your four look like Raheem Moore, Jordan Poyer, Ibrahim Campbell, and Derek Kindred, who you've drafted. At the cornerback position, that's where it's going to be very, very interesting. You've got Joe Hayden. You've got Tremont Williams, who, as you know, on the surface doesn't appear to fit into this program, given his age, given his cost, et cetera.
Correct. I would, and again, just to give you a little bit of pushback, I would say cost, yes, because of the mentality that Sashi Brown is taking in structuring this football team. I actually firmly believe that the scheme that Tremont Williams played in Green Bay with Dom Capers is a lot like the Ray Horton defense, which means Tremont, as an older guy, as you just said, is not going to be put in situations to press man, to have to chase down, you know, Martavis Bryant or Antonio Brown on certain route combinations. So this zone, you know, being able to play up and back, that cat and mouse game that many wide receivers and DBs do play, Tremont understands it because he's done it before. But comes with the expensive price tag, which goes against who we're trying to be as an organization.
And his age. That's, you know, to me, that's all it is.
Correct.
It's not about him, the player.
But if you've got one more, but if, again, for $8 million, if you could have a Pro Bowl type of year opposite Joe Hayden,
that would be helpful.
You'd pay $10, $12 million for that.
I wonder if we would get that. But yes, you certainly would.
So you've
got Hayden, you've got Tremont, you've got Kaywan Williams, you've got Pierre Desir, you've got Justin Gilbert, you've got Charles Gaines, who they liked last year, last year's staff liked.
Started some games at the end of the year.
And then you've got Trey Caldwell, who you just drafted. So right there, that's seven corners. Those seven names will not be on the team.
No.
Safeties, you talked about the four with Raheem Moore, Ibrahim Campbell, Poyer, and Kindred. Now, that's a spot that you could go with four, two each. It's also a spot that you could go with three if your backup can swing. But probably you'll get four.
Yes.
So right now, I'd say those guys feel pretty good about where they're at. Now, a guy like Don Jones, who was here, that's technically a safety but only played on special teams, I don't know if this team's going to have those guys. And if they do have those guys, I'd bet they're going to be young.
Yes, I agree. Trial by fire.
Trial by fire. Let's go to Rick in Parma now. Rick, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi. I was just saying that first receiver they picked up, he resembles Charlie Joyner a little bit. Same size. He was picked up in the fourth round.
And Charlie Joyner, we know, went on to a Hall of Fame career. Charlie Joyner was coached by and retired by our own Al Saunders.
Yes. No, I didn't know that. I just remember watching him. You know, he was with Cincinnati, and I think he was with the Chargers for a while, too.
Yeah, with the Chargers. That's where Al Saunders was his head coach when Al Saunders took over for Air Coryell down there. Yeah, certainly Hall of Famer and a guy that, you know, Al Saunders is very familiar with. He hasn't compared him to Charlie Joyner in our conversations about Corey Coleman. It was interesting yesterday. We got an opportunity to talk to the Andrew Berry about player comps for him. And, you know, Steve Smith, he said he's a better route runner than Steve Smith, but the way that he plays the ball in the air, he sees that. He didn't really have a real comp for him in the National Football League.
Corey Coleman?
Yeah. And that's something
and
he
like
likes
I said,
to
is it Ed Sable? Who's the guy that does the film watching now? It's not Steve. Steve's the one that passed.
Okay. Yeah.
His brother.
Okay.
Is the one. And that's why I asked Andrew. It's Randall Cobb is what he said. The closest comp. And your immediate, you know, comeback was way more physical than Randall Cobb.
Much more physical. And Andrew Berry said much quicker. Much,
correct.
A lot more speed there, which we certainly would be fine with.
But from a production standpoint, what Randall Cobb does in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers is probably similar to the way he's going to be used here in Cleveland.
The difference, I would say, is that Randall Cobb is a slot receiver.
Right.
They only line him up inside.
Okay.
They even when they go too wide, they will play him outside. But what they like to do when they only go too wide is double him up on the same side so he's still inside.
Correct. In the slot.
They typically don't play him outside. I think Corey Coleman's being seen as completely an outside receiver, not an inside receiver.
See, as I look at things and watch what I've seen from Corey Coleman, I want to see Corey Coleman slashing across a defense. You know, the 2C, the 2 cross, you know, the shallow cross,
drag.
You know, the drag, the medium dig, you know, the slant route that we saw. How many times backside would we see the slant route thrown to Travis Benjamin, who was really just a deep ball threat?
Yep.
Those are situations I want to see Corey Coleman in because of his speed, because of his explosiveness. He's going to, A, run away from that tackler or break that tackle, and then you've really got Corey Coleman in space. And that's when things get really fun.
Somebody doesn't allow to say comparable to Antonio Brown. I'm not going to put that on him. From what I've seen of his game, physicality akin to Steve Smith, ability to jump and play significantly bigger than his size akin to Steve Smith. He's got to refine his routes, but this is a guy with a lot of raw talent and clay for Al Saunders and company to mold in that wide receiver room. All right, when we come back, it'll be time for our final segment here on this Tuesday. It's funny, the draft, there was so much hype. It was the draft. Now the draft is in the books. Now I want these guys
training
here.
Training camp now.
Yes. Phase two is happening right now. The players are out there working out every day on the field, able to go through things with the coach. I'd call it kind of like a jog or a run through. There's no team activities right now, but each group can do things. You're just not getting offense versus defense, et cetera. But it's good to see them out there. And obviously, you have to think there's a little bit more of a sense of urgency in some of those rooms, knowing that, hey, 14 guys are coming in, four wide receivers, that we've got to step up and make the best impression we can before we really have to get into this competition that'll open once we have our OTAs and everybody gets together. All right, we'll be back. Final thoughts here on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Wrapping it up here on this Tuesday edition of Cleveland Browns Daily, Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs. Matt, let me ask you, when you get drafted, I would imagine you're eager to get to work, but you have to wait almost 2 weeks to get to work. What do you do in this period of time?
Yeah, I mean, especially for guys that are, in my case, second-day draft picks, and now in as we heard, like Sesta Valve's case, the third-day draft picks. First and second-day guys were all here, for the most part. So they've been to Cleveland. They're probably back home. They've got to see the building. But you're a fourth and beyond pick, you kind of like, hey, yeah, I got drafted. Woo! And then you don't hear anything from the team until you get a random email or a phone call from a travel agent, trying to plan your trip to that whatever city that is. But I think at this point, and I think Sesta Valve laid it out, that's kind of why I asked him the question, it's really back to normal. What are you going to do? You're going to continue to prime your body to come in good shape and be healthy so that you can put on, a good show in that rookie mini camp. And I think in Seth DeValve's case, being a smart young man, as we heard Andrew Berry say yesterday, Corey Coleman coming from a spread offense, as Seth DeValve has, his ability to grasp terminology, which has to be used in the National Football League. So Corey Coleman has to do that coming from that spread out Baylor scheme, and so does Seth DeValve, who, as a Princeton fellow, shouldn't struggle doing so.
When you look at the fact that the Browns drafted some playmakers who played in a spread type of a scheme, they drafted also linemen who both played in a spread out scheme. Well, Baylor's lineman Drango did at Auburn. They ran the ball a ton, but there are going to be some spread elements. I mean, you look at Hugh Jackson's offense, it's kind of a combination of the spread passing game with the power run game.
It absolutely is. And I think, to these points, that's going to fall on the onus of the coaches. And you and I, after the show yesterday, saw Al Saunders going back to work in his office with some Bengals film pulled up, and he's understanding the route combinations, the down and distance, because what Al Saunders wants to do is not only coach it the way it had been coached and perfected in some cases, you can say, in Cincinnati to the point where they started off and the offense got so explosive last year, but now he wants to understand why Hugh Jackson's calling a game the way he's calling a game and what Hugh Jackson thought were winning grades in the National Football League when in Cincinnati. That's the same thing that Al Saunders wants to carry over with his guys here in Cleveland.
No question. Barkevious Mingo, fifth-year options not declined. What does that mean to him as a player, and how does that impact the way that he approaches this season?
I think he's still has a prove-it mindset, because if I were Barkevious Mingo, I would say I would want to have my best year, because he's truly in a contract year now, and by them not picking up his fifth-year option, that means that a long-term deal is the next step with the Cleveland Browns or someone else.
By the way, I've just received word that there is a very good chance that Mo Pedman will call in tonight to the draft review show that features me, you, and Ken Carman all along the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns radio network.
Tires
at
awfully
7 o'clock.
Still flat.
Yes, it's going to be a big day.
Guys, I got a couple questions for you on Twitter.
Yeah, what's
go
up?
Go ahead,
that
Gibbs.
Has rolled in. This one comes to us from Max. Week 14 draft picks, realistically, who could start week one?
Of the 14, who could realistically start week one?
Yes, sir.
All right. Number
Sorry
one.
For butchering your question, Eric.
Corey Coleman. Number two, Emmanuel Agba.
Number three, Sean Coleman.
Sean Coleman. Yep.
I think number number four.
Higgins or Peyton.
Higgins or Peyton. And I think even a fifth then would be, I think, Seth DeValve. If he can grasp the offense, be that and it's what's so funny is the H-back that he played, that mismatch position that he played at Princeton for his last two seasons, is exactly – he'll be a specialty player.
Yeah, package
but in the
player.
But in the right situations, he could come across and play a starting role.
Absolutely. So I think there's a potential for four. You could get a shock from Nassib if he blows everybody away. But I don't see him unseating Desmond Bryant. But the question becomes, what's really a starter? Because if Nassib's out there in your nickel situations, is he a starter?
It depends. Yeah, again, there's – head coaches have the opportunity to start whoever they want.
Correct.
Or list whoever they want. And I think if you're carrying in, you know, 12 personnel, which is one back, two tight ends, you're essentially starting Isaiah Crowell, Gary Barnage, and Randall Telfer or Seth DeValve that given week.
Yeah.
And we've seen that happen before defensively. You can, if you're playing the Patriots, you're not going to be starting, you know, two outside linebackers in that football game. You're going to be starting your nickel situation. So the one interesting thing for me, though, and this is just as you mentioned Des Bryant's name, how about this for a front? Paul Kruger on one side, Emmanuel Agba on the other side, you know, in those 7-8 wide nine techniques with Des Bryant and Carl Nassib internally rushing the passer.
Yeah, and I think that that is something that certainly is feasible. So in terms of guys that I expect to make immediate contributions, instead of talking about starters, but immediate contributions, I think you're going to get immediate contributions from Coleman, Higgins or Peyton. I think those guys will battle, maybe even both of them. Ricardo Lewis, I think, will be a specialty player early on. Agba, Nassib.
Schobert on special teams?
Schobert on special teams, definitely. Scooby Wright maybe on special teams if he can make this team.
If he can make the
team. He's got to compete for that. And then Sean Coleman on the offensive line. I think those are the guys that are going to make real immediate contributions to this team.
Agreed. I agree.
One other question, guys. 2 minutes to go here in our show today. Since no running back's taken in the draft, who is in the mix with Duke Johnson and the Crow? Compliments of Tommy. Thanks for the tweet.
Well, they've still got Glenn Winston, who they've always been high on, but that was more of the past regime. We'll see what they think here. They brought Watson over from Cincinnati, which was a guy that was on their practice squad that Hugh Jackson brought over that I know he is pretty high on. So I think he's somebody to look at as a potential competitor to Crow and Duke Johnson. But I think those two guys are pretty safe as the top two.
All right, then.
All right. Gibbs, somebody was just talking about, you know, where they can find Mo Pedman right now, and they said maybe a donut store, and I said, or a pizza parlor. Why are pizza places called pizza parlors? Why is it a parlor of pizza?
I don't know.
Isn't
it's
it
like
a beauty
ice
parlor?
Cream parlor back in the day.
Like a what?
It's like an ice cream parlor.
Yeah, why?
I don't know. Specializes in those specific types of things, I guess.
They've got have a lot of food ready for Mo Pedman.
My Mo Pedman.
I think the cafeteria is not ready if Mo Pedman were to show up.
Oh, man.
And they feed a lot of guys every day.
Yeah.
They feed Danny Shelton.
I would charge. I want to see a three-way eat-off between Feast Mode, Ken Carmen, and his cousin Mo Pedman. That would be a sight to pull. I'd be a sleeper in there. You've seen me put away the food.
I have.
I'd be a sleeper in there. You wouldn't. They'd laugh when I walk in, just like they'd laugh when I took the field in the fourth quarter of the fourth preseason game. A couple tweets about that today, by the way. I don't know where it's going. I think it's been stalled out.
Please.
For all of us. Hey, I want you could get up fired up. You'll defend me if I get blindsided. You'll defend me.
I will be the Nathan Zagura to your Travis Benjamin.
You will be. Let's go. All right, folks, stay tuned for the Golden Boys. Thanks for being with us here today. Got to thank Sir Andrew Gribble, Jason Gibbs, Matt Wilhelm. Don't forget, tonight at 7, all along the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network, it is the Draft Review Show. Myself, Matt Wilhelm, Ken Carmen, a phone call from Mo Pedman. We're going to hear as well from the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Hugh Jackson, and hopefully the vice president of player personnel, Andrew Berry. So that's a big show tonight at 7 on the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network. Stay tuned for the Golden Boys. And you've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily. I need to be 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.